And this is LaBeth, with the last 2 minutes of Treasure Chest of Big Band. And we're going to be taking it out with Gerald Wilson with Love for Sale.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now, our public affairs show for the week, the new WHFR Journal. And it's coming right up with local news and views.
Become part of the Oliver Family, a great classic Broadway musical at Henry Ford Community College. Join us for the stirring song and dance in this musical treatment of Dickens' classical novel, Oliver, Fridays and Sundays, April 18th through the 27th. Tickets are only $10 for adults and $8 for students with ID at the Adrey Auditorium in the Mackenzie Fine Arts Building on the Henry Ford Community College Dearborn campus. For more information and to make reservations for Oliver, call 313-845-9817.
Amen.
That's right. It's very special. Starting tonight, opening night, in fact, for Oliver, presented here at Henry Ford Community College in the Adre Auditorium. And we just want you all to understand that it's very, very special. Only 2 weekends, Friday and Saturday, and Sunday, too, this weekend and next weekend. So April 18th to 27th, Fridays and Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 2 p.m. This is the new WHFR Journal. And my name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR and host for this show. And with us in the studio are two special guests from the production of Oliver. First, I'd like to introduce to you folks Jerry Jablinski. So welcome, Jerry, and must be pretty exciting. How does it feel right before an opening day for the director?
It's always exciting before the opening day. A couple of last-minute details to take care of, and the culmination of, in this case, about 5 months of hard work on the part of the students and staff.
A lot of people don't know how much time it actually takes to put together any play, many, many weeks of rehearsals. It's not just a matter of learning lines, but there's lighting and choreography and just so many different factors to make it a very, very special sort of thing. This is a special challenge because it's a musical and there's a large cast. So why don't you talk just briefly to our audience about the process. When did you start auditioning and when did people start coming together? And of course the music side of it too. Just try to give us
definitely
a little outline.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, we had auditions in late September. And then we had an eight-week class for those people who passed the auditions to work on the vocal music and on the choreography and the techniques associated with those. So they met two times a week for 8 weeks. Then we took a break, of course, for the holiday. And we started up at the beginning of January, two nights a week in rehearsals, 3 hours a night, plus some additional rehearsals and work calls. And here we are.
Mm-hmm. And it has to be quite a collaboration, too, with the music side. So how did the auditions go? First of all, the director of the, the orchestra and the singers, in a way, the singing coach, if you will, whatever your type, G. Kevin Dewey.
Yes, indeed.
I always say that his first initial G, which they always put in the press releases, stands for Gee Whiz or or Golly or Genius or something. In terms of vocal performances, he certainly is well known in the community with the Vanguard Voices, and there's a Renaissance Choir and other things. And, of course, he's a full-time instructor here at Henry Ford Community College. So what was that collaboration and relationship like? When you're auditioning, were you auditioning some of the people for their voices as well as their acting ability?
Oh, yes, voices, acting ability, and dance as well. Mm-hmm, so it was a collaboration not only with the music department and Kevin Dewey, but Jeremy St. Martin, who's the also the musical director and is the conductor for this show, and Kevin Dewey, who's the vocal director. And then also with the dance department, Janine Bodery, the choreographer. And then, of course, our technical support comes from Chris Bremer, our shop foreman and lighting designer, Brian Tereshevitz, our assistant technical director and production manager, and Judy Fletcher, our costumer, Alan Contino, our chief sound and video engineer. So there were quite a few staff and faculty members involved as well.
Almost half the campus is behind the scenes somehow, somewhere there. Want to introduce also, you've brought with you a one of the performers from the cast. Why don't you introduce him, and I'd like to know more about his involvement in it, too.
Well, this is James Hodges. He's one of our theater majors, and this is his first musical with us. I'll let him talk about the roles that he plays.
Okay. Hi, James. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing? I'm part of the chorus and knife grinder and multiple roles, and I just fit in the circumstances to make the scene flow. A lot of beautiful musical numbers in this show. Who Will Buy and Where's Love are some of the well-done tunes that were composed in this show, and I look forward to performing.
Mm-hmm. How is the chorus featured? Now, the story is, of course, based on the Dickens novel Oliver Twist, and it was popularized in the musical version in the late 60s, right, Jerry? It was 60...
What? I believe it was 68 when the movie came out, yes.
And the movie came out, of course, based on the Broadway play and that same... musical book. So the chorus is you're dressed and participating as a sort of a street person, a young urchin, along with Oliver, or different costumes for different scenes.
Yeah, there are times when you know the commoners at the time would dress up really formal in some certain numbers. You know, think high society because everybody was poor at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, there's certain times where we present the idea of wealth because it was just ideal at the time because everyone was kind of downhearted. So the period and the mood changes to just give a feel of the time period. The music really follows that very well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually there are two choruses. There's what we call the junior chorus and the adult chorus.
The varsity.
Right.
No, I'm sorry. Okay.
The junior chorus is... the children in the workhouse, what we would probably today call an orphanage, more or less, and also the street gang, Fagin's gang, of pickpockets. And that's who they play. And there are some people who are both in the adult and junior chorus, some people just in the junior chorus, some people just in the adult chorus. And then the adult chorus, as James said, represents a wide range of people. He has one scene in the local pub where the working class is having a good time until Bill Sykes, the local heavy, shows up. Then we have some people on the street, some working class people on the street. We have upper-class people on the street, and then various individuals in various scenes. As he said, he plays the knife grinder, mm-hmm. which is a vocal music role and a choral music role, and those are part of the street vendors, as, of course, people sold their services or wares on the street.
Mm-hmm. What's your background coming into this? This is your first production... participation in production here at the college, I guess, but what was your background coming in? Did you act in high school plays, or were you a music student?
I started at Rufford Union, and I did three productions there. I did Crazy for You, a Gershwin musical.
Oh, wow.
Romeo and Juliet, and then my senior year, I got the lead in Singing in the Rain.
Wow, that's really prestigious credentials. Congratulations. Wow. Those are some difficult things, but they're all musicals, aren't they? All three? Well, Romeo and Juliet's not a musical, but...
No, not quite.
No, not quite. Well, you might have a little string plunking somewhere in the background, but, you know. Although I thought, Jerry, in the musical history, they actually think that Shakespeare's plays had a lot more music that was played between scenes than what is... I mean, the scripts don't mm-hmm. talk about that, but...
Mm-hmm. Right. And there are songs in some of the plays.
Right,
that
there
are
some songs, but
part of the show, and then of course musical accompaniment up in what they called the heavens, the balcony above the stage, where the string players and the percussionists and the wind players would be, and sort of like a movie soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, live. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But well, James, it's great that you're here at Chosen the College, although we are one of the few institutions in the area that allow such access and such quality challenges, too, for students in both music and theater. And that's, I guess, a little plug for the theater program here. It should be a lot of a plug, in fact. What's coming up? We'll just put Oliver aside for a second and come back to it and give a big round of applause and let you get back to the fine-tuning of the stage. But what's coming up with the theater program over the spring and summer semesters here?
Well, spring semester, we have the student-directed one-act festival. We've got four one-acts this year, two comedies and two dramas with four student directors, student designers as well. That will be performing the last two weekends in June, Thursdays through Sundays. Then, in the summer semester, we have The Time of Your Life by William Saroyan, directed by award-winning professional director Christopher Bremer of the Jewish Ensemble Theater.
Mm, that's a fun play. I've seen that before somewhere.
Oh,
yes,
The
Time of Your Life. Oh, great humor.
Yeah.
Great social satire, too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a wonderful piece. And actually, we've got auditions coming up for that Monday and Wednesday, the 21st and the 23rd.
Oh, next
week. Coming up Monday and Wednesday, yeah.
Wow.
So if you're interested in auditioning, those auditions are at 7 p.m. You can come either Monday or Wednesday right to the theater and audition for that. That's the summer show, so it runs the last two weekends in August. Then, before we wrap that one up, we have auditions for the fall show, Tuesday and Thursday, August 26th and 28th, again at 7 p.m. We have auditions for our Theater for Young Audiences production. This year we're doing Wisdom and Wonder, which is a show about Greek civilization and culture, and it incorporates a dance, an original score by Anthony Lai, a local composer who was a former student here of the college and also a graduate of Wayne State University's music program. And we will be doing 23 performances of that November 28th through December 14th, 10 matinees for Wayne County Elementary Schools, as well as 3 weekends for families.
For those folks that don't remember their History of Western Civilizations class, the Greeks were kind of important in the shaping of our society today. The whole idea is about democracy, even though they had their failings about that, but and their philosophers and so on. So this is going to be a sort of a survey of those, the roots, you might say, that have been contributed by ancient Greece civilization.
Definitely. Definitely. So it'll be a very educational show for the, we're targeting second through eighth graders. It will be accompanied by a study guide for the teachers. And actually, the author of the show, who is local, will be offering her services to the schools. So she can actually go to the schools who book shows with us and do a presentation about the show to help prepare students and get them oriented before they come and see the show.
Just another unique offering, although we've done this for many, many years, folks, a theater for young people, which doesn't necessarily have any extremely young people on the stage. Sometimes you have younger actors cast, but it's basically you know, a wide range of ages that can perform, depending on the parts that have to be cast, of course, in these plays. But it is intended for young audiences, so and families, too, for that matter. So
yes,
we'll look forward to all of those things. And if you want more information about the theater program here at Henry Ford Community College, of course, the internet, the HFCC website, hfcc.edu, probably theater.
Right.
Something,
the
slash
theater.
Yep. The theater link.
The theater link, yeah.
Give you all of this information. So what's left to do for Oliver except to get there? How can they get tickets if they want to get them in advance, for example, or just have them at the door waiting for them?
Well, either way, yes, you can reserve tickets by calling 845-9817, area code 313, of course, and just leave your reservation there on the phone, and we'll get back to you and hold some seats for you. It has limited seating. We seat only 200 per performance because some of the action comes out into the audience. We've taken some of the seating out for this particular production.
Right.
So the performers are very close to the audience, so it's a lot of fun that way.
Opening night tonight, are there still some seats available?
Yes, there are. There are seats
available.
What's
the latest they could call on the phone?
Well, and get somebody? I'm not sure, but
yeah,
I mean
leave
a
message. You might check as late as maybe 4 or 5
o'clock. Oh, even later, though, because we're going to be there all day. Okay. So,
but the doors for 8 o'clock performance would open at 7:30. And this
correct.
Is Adria Auditorium, the theater that's in the Fine Arts Center at Henry Ford Community College. That's Evergreen Road, north of Michigan Avenue and south of Ford Road. And so it's not, always have to, I like to mention, it's not the Ford, the city of Dearborn's Ford
Community Performing Arts Center.
Right, Community and Performing Arts Center. That's a great auditorium, too. But no, we have our own, folks. And so it's here on the main campus, Evergreen Road, closer to Ford Road, just south of Ford Road, in the Fine Arts Center. And looking forward to this. I'll be there seeing it on Sunday. And it's going to be great fun. I'm sure the spirit, such a positive sort of thing. Just a comment, and I'll throw this one to James here. What do you see as the relevance of this play today? I mean, it's a play, it's a story that was popular in the 60s here, but you see it as talking to the social situation today at all?
Yeah.
Or is it just a, you know, historical curiosity?
There's that, but then there's also the essential story of love and to love more, and everybody needs love and looking for that place of belonging no matter where it is. So it gives people a sense of wholeness and hope. to look forward to great expectations of a better life. So that's always a great message.
Absolutely. Never have enough of that. Although someday I'd like to see maybe less of a need for hope, and it just happens, you know.
Yeah.
It's already there. You don't have to hope so much if it's already really good. But yes, these days are troubled times in many ways. There are some messages there. One, and I can say this, and maybe you folks shouldn't, but of course the gap between rich and poor, which is what Dickens so well demonstrated in the terrible times of the mid-19th century. Last 30 years, that's been the trend here in America, and maybe the times aren't quite so terrible, but we do have more homeless people and more poor people than ever, and the difference between rich and poor, well, let's just hope it doesn't get as bad as what's displayed in Oliver, that we can turn things around. So I think there might actually be a message here that says, maybe we should do more than hope, in fact, and try to make improvements. So really think it's great that we're bringing this back. It is a great, fun, powerful. The music is so great. People I know in the 60s were always humming every one of those major songs, the family song and the love song you mentioned, James.
Where is love?
Where is love? I've got no voice, but I'm sure you could do it beautifully, but I'll wait for the play. So, folks, that's 8 o'clock, Henry Ford Community College, Adre Auditorium. Audrey Auditorium, and that's tonight, Friday and Saturday night this week, and Friday and Saturday night next week at 8 p.m., 2 p.m. only on Sunday. So only 6 performances. You got to get here and see this. I'm sure it's going to be one of the great theatrical presentations in the area this year. And again, if the phone number, if you want to call ahead and reserve, get your name put down there so you can pick up your tickets at the door, is 313-845-9817. So do you say break a leg to the director or only the actors, Jerry?
I think you can say it to just about everybody.
Okay, and that's a positive thing, folks. We're not hoping anybody gets injured. It's a theater thing. It's a tradition. So break a leg, both of you, and we're all going to have a lot of fun seeing Oliver here at Henry Ford Community College. So,
and thanks for having us,
you're
Jay.
You're very welcome, thanks. And more power to you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal right after these messages.
Henry Ford Community College has a lot to offer. A credit transfer guarantee, a job skills guarantee, and a tuition freeze guarantee. Registration for spring, summer, and fall classes begins Monday, March 31st. Call 1-800-585-HFCC for additional information. Or check the website at hfcc.edu. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
Become part of the Oliver Family, a great classic Broadway musical at Henry Ford Community College. Join us for the stirring song and dance in this musical treatment of Dickens' classical novel, Oliver. Fridays and Sundays, April 18th through the 27th. Tickets are only $10 for adults and $8 for students with ID at the Adre Auditorium in the McKenzie Fine Arts Building on the Henry Ford Community College Dearborn campus. For more information and to make reservations for Oliver, call 313-845-9817.
Well, we will have a lot of fun at the Oliver presentation. Henry Ford Community College Theater. 8 o'clock tonight, Friday night, tomorrow, Saturday at 8, Sunday at 2, and next weekend also, Friday, Saturday, 8, and Sunday at 2. Only 6 performances. Something, you know, if you're looking for something to do, okay, it's $10 a person and the tickets for adults, but by all means, you want to try to put that on your list and get over here. Bring the family. It's going to be an awful lot of fun. I think they said it's a little over 2 hours in length with a break halfway through. So fun will be had by all. And free parking, too, at Henry Ford Community College. Yep. So we're going to continue with our show. And we're going to be joined now by my co-host for today, Netta Piggy, is just on his way in the door. And I've got a couple of topics here. Welcome, Ned. I've already mentioned your name. I didn't have to do that, but
beware of doing favors for friends.
Uh-oh. Put your headphones on, and we'll let you make your excuses over the air. No, there we go. So how have you been doing? You were very busy last week as a volunteer here at WHR helping with our pledge drive, and I want to say thanks to all of our pledge people, people who called in and said, yes, we want to keep WHR on the air, even though you don't need much money. You got to have some money, and those people that pledged are wonderful folks.
Well, I didn't do any more than anybody else. In fact, I'm sure there are others that did a much, much more.
Well, I think I counted up your hours. It was about 8 hours,
really?
Including your two on Saturday, and you were here with Betty last week, and then and so we really appreciate that. But
part of our regular show time is
right.
In there.
Ned said that those, you know, our 60 plus volunteers, we all double up and triple up in terms of hours to help get your attention. And just once a week do we ask for money. However, you know, if you missed out once a year, just for 1 week, that's right. But if you feel the need to help us out, we did meet our minimum goal. But, you know, a few extra dollars, we had a one of our audio consoles self-destruct.
The maximum goal would be nice.
Yeah, right. Well, there's no maximum. But we're lean and mean in a nice way here, and we do appreciate all the people that pledged. If you do want to pledge still, you can call 313-845-9676, and we have someone sitting out in the office, so the office side extension number 2 would be answered even during this show live on Fridays from 1 to 2, or just go to the website whfr.fm, and there is still a donation form there that you can send electronically to us. But we do appreciate it, and it does make it all possible, and the volunteers who were here for nothing, that's why they call them volunteers, are doing a fantastic job to give you news and information you can't get anywhere else on the dial. Now,
actually, we pay a little.
Well, our program director and our music director, who put in more than 20 hours a week, they get stipends, it is true, Ned, of $80 a week for one of them and $100 a week for the others. And barely, these days, barely pays for their gas money coming back and forth 4 or 5 days a week. So, in fact, it works out to be less than minimum wage for them. But it is something. It's all we've been able to manage. And
the officers.
The two top officers, that's all. Yeah, that we do work that out.
I think it is less than minimum wage.
It is, in terms of the time they spend here. Okay, on to local news and views. I just had a few comments, and maybe, Ned, you want to jump in after you listen to me, about taxes, first of all.
Did we go through fair tax yet?
No, didn't mention anything. We had, while you were getting here, I was talking to Jerry Jablinski and one of the actors from the play, Oliver.
Oh, and, yeah, you mentioned
that's
that.
Opening tonight, right. And
are we going to work the we're going to work the performance, aren't we?
Well, the telecommunication area, my area, along with the help from the two video production classes, we're actually taping the play live on Sunday. So if people who come to the Sunday performance at 2 p.m., there'll be some cameras off to the side and behind. It won't obstruct anyone's vision of the play, but when you applaud and cheer, yeah, you'll be recorded on tape. The sound.
No, what I meant is our usual promotion of the program.
Absolutely. It's a must play here on WHFR. It's so unique that every 2 hours at least, and during well, they heard that same spot twice so far in this hour. Mm-hmm. Let me talk about taxes, and maybe, Ned, you can tell me about your situation. But Tuesday, I know, me too, because Tuesday was the date, April 15th, as it always is. And some of us do wait till the last minute, and there is some reason for that. If you think you're going to owe money, you don't want to have to pay until the last minute, or maybe it takes you to the last minute to find the money to pay them. I use one of those computer programs to help me. I don't use a
TurboTax
agent. I don't hate to give a plug on the air, but there aren't too many.
Oh, there's more than one?
Well, no. TurboTax by Intuit Company, they merged with their big competition a few years ago. So TurboTax is almost the only major program that will help you with taxes. H&R Block has an online sort of version of it. There are so it's... Well, it happens to be the one I use. But
what does it do? Is it kind of helps you along?
Yeah, it helps you step by step. All you have to do is put in the information they ask you about, and it takes you step by step through it. But it's still, even if you used an outside tax consultant or advisor, something like an H&R Block person, you still have to give them all the receipts yourself. You still have to be organized enough to take all that information into them, like your W-2 form and so on. And so I never could see why... If I've got to get it all organized anyway, why don't I just sit in front of the computer and type it in for an hour or two myself?
Right.
And then it automatically does all the addition, all the computation. And most of these tax advisors, that's what they do for you. They just sit in front of the computer and type it in to a computer program anyway. They don't actually sit there with a calculator.
You're absolutely right. The way I'm organized, they do mine in 45 minutes.
Yep.
And they still want a ton of money to do it.
Well, that's it. The average cost...
It's based on the number of forms that you use.
I have some information in front of me from the National Taxpayers Union, and that's ntu.org. They're a nonprofit organization, and they collect and do research on taxation nationwide, state by state, and the cost of it. And their press release this week that I'm looking at here, and again, you can get on the mailing list for free, by the way.
What earth-shaking thing did we learn?
Well, the average person, they have to pay other people $169 to prepare their taxes. Now, I don't know if that includes businesses or the average business, but the average tax preparation fee is $169 per form, I mean per person, and that's been going up. These rates are going up, I guess, because either it takes longer or things are more complicated than ever. As you probably know, Ned, there's 11,000 pages of tax code now.
I never looked at it.
Almost no one has, including H&R Block people. Almost no single person can know all the laws and rules. There's so many exclusions, exceptions.
They change it annually, too. That's the problem.
Yeah. And
that's why I don't do mine. I just figure it's a lot easier.
Listen to this. This is from an NTU, National Taxpayers Union, paper that they paid a Professor David Keating to prepare for them, a policy paper. And I'm just going to read the first couple paragraphs about this to show you the complexity of it. Like old age, tax complexity has been creeping up on us. We may not notice it 1 year at a time, but a review of older tax documents compared to today's forms and instructions reveals just how shockingly complicated taxes have become. In the most recent fiscal year, the Treasury Department reported its paperwork burden, which consists almost entirely of tax forms, at 6.97 billion hours. That's almost 7 billion hours. That is the equivalent of 3.35 million employees, so 3 1/3 million employees working 40-hour weeks year-round without any vacation. The projection for the fiscal year following is over 7.2 billion hours. Individual taxpayers alone will spend an estimated 3.55 billion hours, 3.5 billion hours, complying with the federal income tax laws this year, up from 3.18 billion hours last year. This is what I found out, Ned. I contribute not much, but I spread around my money to many nonprofit organizations. So it's only like $5 or $10 here or there every
contributions.
Cash contributions. Well, this year, the federal government wants the name and the address. Well, they always wanted the name. They want the full mailing address with every one of these organizations. It's got to be typed into these electronic forms. So you can't just say, the Cancer Society or something. You have to put down the street address and the city, state, and zip code. too. So it took me, luckily with the internet, I had to go,
to find the address.
Yeah, to find the mailing addresses of all these people. So I had to enter 20 or 30 addresses because, as I said, I don't give much money, but I spread it around, single donations here and there, depending on the month. And so it took me an extra hour and a half to look it up and then type it into the program, which I assume every form would need. Now, I can understand that, if the government wanted to research something and it says the organization to save butterflies or something, that could just be totally made up to give you a tax credit. But if they call you in for an audit, then you'd have to prove name, address, and have the receipt, of course.
Well, you would have it then.
Well, you'd have to have it then, but why do they need it now from everybody, including people like me? And I'm on the low end, folks, not the bottom, of course, but it just took me an extra hour and a half. So when you talk about paperwork and hassle, I didn't expect that.
Well, that's interesting because I had a new tax preparer this year,
mm-hmm.
and I had in the past used H&R, what they call premium.
Mm.
And the cost is usually based on, even if you put one lousy number on another form that you don't usually use, that's what makes it add up.
Per form or something else.
I noticed under my contributions, which were in excess of $4,000, I don't remember the exact number, H&R Block, it put like miscellaneous. So mm-hmm. my new tax preparer, I said, since I'm fussy, couldn't you group all the ones for churches, all the ones for schools, all the ones in different categories? And he typed up a list, but he didn't tell me he had to look up the addresses for each one of those.
Well, that's what my TurboTax form said I had to do.
Well, so then you might be right.
If you get audited, you're in a lot of trouble.
I'll have my guy fix that. Let him find the addresses.
Let me finish the press release here. I had underestimated that cost per person. According to this official report from the National Taxpayers Union, okay, individual taxpayers will spend a lot of money, too, not just hours doing it. An estimated $27.7 billion this year for tax software, like the one I used, tax preparers, postage, if you send your forms in the mail, and other out-of-pocket costs. And this is according to a December 2007 Internal Revenue Service.
Now, do you file electronically as well?
I do electronically,
that costs money, I understand.
$18 to the federal for me and $18 to the state. So it's
if you have
$36.
A tax preparer do it, it's not $18. It's $5 for him,
well,
$3 for the state. I didn't realize they penalize you for filing electronically. That's crazy. Wouldn't that be easier for them?
Penalty is just a filing fee, I think. But
well, if you mailed it, it would cost you what, 50 cents, a dollar and a half?
Whatever, yeah, right. Yeah, no. So it would be cheaper if you did mail it, certainly. You wouldn't have to pay the fee. But so anyway, here, counting time and money for individual taxpayers, the compliance burden would total an incredible $120 billion for individual taxpayers alone. Keep in mind that these costs do not account for tax planning or tax minimization strategies, nor do they account for the huge cost imposed on the nation's economy by high tax rates. When accounting for all taxpayers, from those who file the simplest 1040 EZ to those filing the long form 1040 in many schedules, the IRS now puts the average compliance time at 26 and a half hours. That's up from 25.4 hours 3 years ago. Because getting your receipts together each month, just keeping that organized in a box or something, that's some time too. Out-of-pocket cost, this is what I understated earlier.
I spend more time than that. If that's 26 hours, my wife might spend 12 hours and I might spend 12 hours easy.
Yeah,
just organizing the information.
Oh, yeah. It takes me, I mentioned, hour and a half for those names and addresses, but altogether it's about 5 hours, but that's after I get organized, which takes me about 2 days, which is 4 to 5 hours each day. So, yeah, right. And
there are people that go to accountants and drop a box full of papers on. I don't know what that costs.
Well, then the accountants have to sort it out, and I'm sure they're paid by hours it takes them to tabulate it all. So out-of-pocket cost, according to this report, this is the official per individual taxpayer, expected to average $207, up from $185 3 years ago. It's important to remember that out-of-pocket costs include taxpayers who do their own taxes, as well as those who go to paid preparers. So it's, in other words, the cost that I involved in tax software, and the increase in tax law's complexity that we mentioned has by itself added well over $1 billion in annual paperwork burdens over the past 10 years. So I have said in past years, Ned, on this show at this time, and I
astronomical
only,
cost,
well, I only complain about our taxation laws in our system once a year, and that's too bad because we should all complain all the time. The tax code is too big, too complicated, and some people, of course, feel we're being taxed too much, but that's a separate issue. I think the first issue is it unfair, first of all, for someone like the average person who can't do it themselves. You know, that's in a democracy like America, when we have a tax system where an average person has to pay somebody else or has to put out and be computer knowledgeable, put out money for a computer and be knowledgeable how to use a computer program in order to do their taxes themselves. And even the math, I mean, I've done it manually with paper and pencil and trying to add and subtract and divide by the complicated formulas they come up with in these things. Very confusing for a college graduate. And I have two master's degrees on top of it, okay? And I was good at math on top of it, although I'm not an engineer. But
well, it's a different English.
Just too complicated for our country and too much waste of time as well as out-of-the-pocket money. And, of course, insult to injury, it finally, the program tells me, you make too much money to qualify for the rebate of $600. So,
oh, it tells you that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's too much money got to do with it?
Oh, well, you know, this.
Oh, there, wait, there was a.
The economic incentive rebate that was passed into law by our Congress, signed by President Bush. If you're, okay, I make more than $60,000 a year, okay? And at that point.
That's the cutoff point?
Yeah, yeah. But it's some sort of calculation. But anyway, I make a little bit above that. And so I also got that bad news. Besides owing them money, I got the bad news that. But it's not just because I had to owe money or I didn't get the $600. I've talked about this and on this show,
too. I thought you got at least three if you didn't register right. for the six.
No, you get nothing if you're over $60,000. Nothing. Yeah. Well, I mean, some people say economic incentive. You don't want to pay money to people that already have enough money that don't need an economic incentive.
I don't have
but it's not coming to everybody. No. A lot of people think, oh, I'm waiting for that check in the mail. Well, first of all, you won't get it if you don't file your taxes.
And that means even that simple, easy form.
That's right. Yeah, if you're over the $60,000.
That you didn't make any money.
Well, if you didn't make any money, okay, then you'll get the rebate check sent to you.
Well, but you got to file.
But you still have to file. That's right. Correct. Now, what are some alternatives here? So, well, how can you make it more simple? I mean, you know, homeowners get to deduct mortgage interest, and you, if you have more kids, you have more dependents, and there's some cherished deductions in this system
that you can't violate.
Well, but there's thousands more. I mean, there's tax credits to Walmart just because they're Walmart. How did that get written into law? Some legislator put it in the tax code. That there's a whole bunch, and this is what I don't think, there's a whole bunch of tax code that benefits only a single company.
Right. And, or an industry.
Or an industry. And, you know, it is so complicated now, and there's so many exceptions and exemptions that it doesn't seem fair to me for anybody. And so what was proposed several years ago, I need that book there, the fair
tax.
Okay. Now
we'll see how fair it is.
It can be confusing because it starts with the same letter. There was something proposed by Steve Forbes of Forbes magazine when he tried to run for president about 10 or 15 years ago.
Oh, is this his invention?
No, he had the flat tax.
Oh, yeah.
And his idea was the same percentage would be paid by everybody, including the rich. And by the way, Warren Buffett is in favor of this. Because he wants to pay his fair share. Right now, his lawyers tell him he doesn't have to because he's got all these corporate deductions. But
he says he pays.
He's one of the few rich people.
His secretary.
Absolutely, yeah,
that's
yeah,
what he said.
Yeah. And so some rich people actually see the inequity of it, even though the others are taking the money and running with
how
it.
How much money do you need?
Well, the point is, if there was a single rate, it would be easier to compute at tax time. But going beyond that, that's called the flat tax, folks. And there's pros and cons.
That's based on income only, isn't it?
Right.
And there's no deduction.
Almost no. I think they, as a hedge, they keep the mortgage deduction, but basically no deductions.
That's easy enough to calculate.
Very easy. But But the proposal that has been favored by Ron Paul, Republican, although formerly he ran as a Libertarian back in 92 with her presidential candidacy and as a Libertarian. But Ron Paul was a Republican presidential candidate this year. He did not get it. Of course, John McCain got it. He was in favor of what's called the fair tax.
Okay? I don't remember him talking about it.
Well, nobody ever asked him. But he was the only candidate that was for it other than Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee from Arkansas was for the fair tax, but who ever asked him for the details there either? Now, this bill has been introduced in Congress every year. It's called the Fair Tax Act, and I've got a copy of it from 2005, but it's the same one. It's introduced every year by a couple of representative and a senator, so it's introduced in both houses, and it's been stonewalled.
What's
constantly.
The basic concept?
Okay,
of
here we go. Summary of it. Several points, but listen to this. First of all, what's amazing, it would repeal the income tax totally. No more filling out forms, no more tax preparation. Repeal the income tax and other taxes. It would abolish the entire Internal Revenue Service, whose put-down nickname is the Infernal Revenue Service.
Well, it's a lot of people and a lot of money, that's for sure.
And it enacts a national sales tax to be administered primarily by the states. So it's a consumption tax, mostly. In other words, those people that buy the most pay the most. Okay.
What's the idea of that versus the guy that makes the most?
Well, let me give you the details, though. Okay. The fair, and there's several areas here, so I think our listeners want to hear this.
I think it's interesting.
Okay. And you can get more information various places. The fair tax. I wanted to mention this also, Ned, because there's a petition circulating in Michigan. You say, well, it's supposed to be a local show. Right now, in Michigan, it might be on the ballot in November for the fair tax just for the state of Michigan. It does away with Michigan income taxes.
Well, that would solve the problem. They're collecting the tax anyway.
It does
anyway.
Away with most business taxes and replaces it with a sales tax. What are we paying now for sales tax? This
6%.
Is a quiz. To 10%. For a mere 4 cents more on the dollar, we can do away with the income tax and most business taxes in Michigan.
Okay.
And eliminate all of this tax prep cost for everybody in Michigan.
Sounds good to me for
so,
a state
folks,
tax.
Folks, if you see, whether it's Dearborn Homecoming or some other public place, someone out there with a petition, I'd ask you to consider signing it, if only because if it's on the ballot, then you have more information to decide later if you really want to vote for it or not.
But the pro and con will come out.
Oh, of course. Of course it will. And I don't think most people, I have a book in front of me by Neil Bortz, B-O-O-R-T-Z.
Isn't he a congressman?
No, he's a syndicated talk show host, but a congressman.
Oh, that's right.
John Linder also co-authored this book, and it's the one that explains it all. It's called The Fair Tax Book. So go Google that, even if you can't spell Bortz, B-O-O-R-T-Z. It explains it in great detail. It is very clear. Let me just go into this. The fair tax proposal is a comprehensive revenue plan that would eliminate most major federal income and payroll taxes, including personal, gift, estate, capital gains, alternative minimum, Social Security, Medicare, self-employment, and corporate taxes. On payday, every American would receive 100% of his or her paycheck, minus any state income taxes. So, I mean, if the federal bill is passed, then you still have state to worry about. But imagine, for some people, that's 30% more money.
What is the rate
every
he's
week.
Talking about?
Okay. The federal taxes would be replaced by a national retail sales tax. And it's higher than you think. In 2007, this is what they said in 2005, the
must
bill passed.
Must be like the one they have in Canada.
They would wait for 2 years. Yes, the general something, the GRI.
The GFT or something.
Right.
Something
like and that. Our Canadian listeners might want to let us know what that is. But it does think here, and this was subject to revision, that the national sales tax rate would be set at 23% with adjustments made to the rate in subsequent years. Now, if you're for lower taxes, folks, this doesn't lower the taxes. It just eliminates a lot of tax burden, a lot of excess cost, and makes it all simpler and easier to understand for everybody. And as you understand, a consumption tax means that the rich, who consume more and are paying higher prices for things, are going to be paying more. They'll be paying. So is it a graduated tax? Sure it is. Those that buy more pay more, and it's graduated. Of course, if they choose not to buy so much, then they don't have to pay so much tax. But
well, I'm
if
sure
it's going to replace
a plateau, of which
no.
there's people that make nope. less than so many
oh.
dollars,
yeah.
there's a plateau there where you get it back. Somebody,
well, but
somebody has to calculate that.
Realize that the poor people now are still. I mean, they're getting money back now on their taxes once they file them, and so they're really not paying. If you're under $30,000 a year, you're not paying any taxes anyway.
You actually get money back, somebody else's
yes.
money, not your
right.
own.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, but it is a graduated system. But listen to the other details. The fair tax is progressive, as I said, it's graduated, and to make the system fair for low-income Americans. This is part of the fair tax plan, folks. All taxpayers would receive a monthly prebate so that no one would pay taxes for consumption up to the poverty line. So rich or poor, everybody gets a check from the government every month. That's to balance out just what you said, the unfairness of the poor people having to pay that 23% on stuff that they have to get, like food and clothing, and even though they don't buy much probably because they don't have much money, medicine, they get a prebate every month, okay? And that makes it fair for everybody in terms of the low level. Still, no withholding, no federal income taxes, all these other taxes, Social Security, Medicare, it's all covered. All that money comes in through the 23% national sales tax.
So what is the prebate, 3 or 4%?
It doesn't say here, okay, but it would
and
be something
decides?
That would be here. Well, the legislature should work that out, but 11,000 pages of tax code, for goodness sake, they can certainly figure this one out and agree. There will have to be negotiations on that. The national retail tax would only be collected on new purchases, making used purchases tax-free. So like at a Salvation Army store or a used car, no tax on that. Additional business purchases would be exempt from the tax. So business people buying supplies or things for their business don't pay any tax on what they need to buy, thereby eradicating corporate tax compliance costs currently hidden in retail prices. See, right now, businesses, when they buy supplies, papers, pencils,
they don't
whatever,
pay tax? The
they
business?
Do now,
yeah,
but
then
they wouldn't.
Why are they getting a tax break?
Because right now these are hidden taxes. You see, and they
you mean hidden expenditures.
It's hidden in the retail right. prices, right? Existing state tax authorities would collect the national sales tax, allowing for the abolition of the Internal Revenue Service. The Fair Tax Plan also calls for the repeal of the 16th Amendment, which allows for the collection of federal income taxes. You know, that was added when they came up with the idea, let's have income taxes for everybody. It wasn't in the Constitution, so they had to pass an amendment.
When it came up in 1913, I think it had to be $10,000 or more.
Yeah, of course, that's been changed. But this would repeal
it. That was a lot of money
in 1913. It's part of the bill that this amendment would be repealed, and so there would be no more allowance by amendment of a federal income tax. But sales tax, yeah, it would authorize a sales tax. Last major point here, the Fair Tax Act is designed to be dollar-for-dollar revenue neutral. As I said, the plan is not designed at this point with that 23% to raise any more or any less revenue for the government. The benefit is a simpler, more accountable form of tax revenue. And from the National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org, they have pro and con arguments there for it, as well as the, I think it's fairtax.org or fairtax.com. The Neil Bortz people have their own organization. There it is, fairtax.org. So that's easy to remember. And you can find out pro and con that way. But just the recommendation.
Wouldn't we need a bureaucracy to pass out the pre-tax rebate and decide where the money goes? Somebody's got to collect this.
Everyone who is employed, the employer somehow has to share. Well, they always share this. Well, I guess, would you still have a Social Security number? I guess for ID purposes you would.
Well, somebody they would have to pay.
They have to tell the state. The states would handle the collecting of the sales taxes because they had to collect the state sales tax anyway,
right?
Right.
That's
so
why
they
I
collect.
Said.
They collect the federal tax too, 23% plus whatever the state tax is. You see, and then they would probably be the ones that would know about who's employed in their state, and they would send out to the names and addresses these prebate checks.
So it could probably each state would be sending out the prebate based on
yes.
the state collecting it.
That would seem logical because even though I know that you just don't want the big federal bureaucracy getting involved here, because you want accountability. You want it closer to home. But if you don't need all those people for income tax collection, like if you don't need the IRS for that, those people could be recycled into other government jobs, like the Environmental Protection Agency or other places they're needed and actually more beneficial. These are punitive and I'd say discriminatory practices. With 11,000 pages of tax code, there's unfairness for almost everybody, and all the exemptions and exceptions and credits don't make it fair collectively.
Well, okay. One thing is for sure, everybody would be paying, right?
Yeah, those that buy a lot would pay more.
I mean,
more.
Whatever you buy. You...
Yeah. Now, since it's so simple, 23%, right? Everybody would know what that rate is.
Plus 10 for the state.
If you then,
that'd be 33%.
If you then take the arguments of the, you know, the reduce the tax people, that, you know, should make government smaller. Well, getting away with saying heave-ho to the IRS is going to save a lot of money right there. But if you want to do that, then everybody would know, okay, let's reduce the national sales tax from 23 to 22%, you know, or 21%. Everybody in the whole country would know how much they're paying to the federal government for the range of federal government services, or in this case, that petition that's coming around, and I haven't seen it yet locally here in Dearborn, but I understand there's a team. In fact, it was on the Tim Skupik show, on the record, or is it off the record, that's on Channel 56 once a week from Lansing. They're the ones that mentioned that this, in fact, they had the guy on for an interview who was circulating the petition for the fair tax in Michigan. And,
well, the conservatives in the world, no matter how you look at it, are going to say, you're talking 10% for the state. Let's use your example for the state of Michigan,
right,
which I think is just fine. And then 23%, you're talking about a third of everybody's income is going to be taxed. And right now we got people...
No. Don't put it that way.
Well, you're paying tax on a third of your...
You're paying a tax on what you're
buying. Buying, right.
Remember that the check you get from your employer doesn't have that 30% taken out at the outset.
Yeah, except most people spend all the money they make, so
well,
really
maybe,
most of the same thing.
Maybe if that extra money goes on 23% plus whatever the sales tax is. I mean, Michigan, it's already 6%,
right.
So you're paying 30.
I think it's great
30.
For the Michigan.
You'd be thinking twice, wouldn't you, about what you buy. Do you really need to buy it? You know, we do overconsume. We go in debt too wildly. Maybe if the prices were a little higher because they included the services that we have to pay for, it would work out better. But the whole point is, it's not 33% of your income. It's 33% if you add the 10% to the 23%. If that 10% goes through in the state of Michigan, it would be that much. It's only from what you buy. So if it's a matter of savings, you can save every penny that you make. There's no taxes on what you're saving, see?
Right.
And then the interest you get on what you've saved
is not taxed.
Is interest. That's right. It's not.
Right.
Yeah. You see the consequences here? So there would be tremendous incentive. And so I think it's unfortunate, and I'm not a Republican, folks, but I think it's unfortunate that the fair tax that was proposed and mentioned every time he got a chance by Ron Paul and by Mike Huckabee, who is a likable guy, even more likable, I think, than Ron Paul, never got a chance to be heard. Now, maybe with this ballot going around in Michigan, this ballot proposal for a fair tax, at least for the Michigan portion, that we can get attention to people for doing it nationally. It does not hurt, and whether you're a liberal or conservative, as they point out here, it doesn't reduce any of the money coming into the government now, but once it becomes simple and noticeable, oh, that's 23% of the federal government, maybe people say, I don't want to pay 23, I want it 22. Well, what are we going to cut out? How are we going to make government smaller? You know, it'll be very visible. Everybody will know across the whole country. Right now, it's that withholding that they never even
now
miss.
The problem with it is most names given to things are misnomers.
Mm-hmm.
And now we say this is fair, but I don't know why this might be better called national sales tax as opposed
it
to
is.
Fair. Call it fair? Well, I don't know.
Because of the extra, like the prebate checks, Ned.
Mm.
Okay. It because that would make it truly fair for the low-income
Americans.
It's
like George Bush's war. They give all interesting names to the...
Mm-hmm. And it keeps the government, by repealing the 16th Amendment, from ever trying federal income taxes again, too, which is a sneaky way to get money to do things at the federal government level that the average person is not consciously aware. When the money disappears before they even get the money in their check, you're not aware how much you're really paying and how much you're losing until maybe April 15th each year. So there's pro and con, folks. I'm not telling you, and neither is Ned, which way to think about this. But you might want to consider, if the petition person shows up with a ballot proposal for November here in Michigan for a Michigan.
I like it for the state tax. I think it's great idea.
Yeah. Everybody I've talked to said, you mean 4% more and then there's no income tax? In a lightning flash, we'll do it, you know. And then businesses would love it too, because they don't have to pay money on the stuff they have to buy, so they get a benefit out of it too.
Well, they're collecting the tax now, so it's not a new burden for them. It just changes the amount
in a different way. Well, as I said, the total amount of money coming in at the start, once you put this in place, would be the same. But I think it would open the make an easier route in the future for people who want to downsize government to do that. Or if they want to have a major expense, whether it's national health insurance or Iraq, another Iraq or Iran war or something, the government would say, hey, we want to do this. We're going to have to raise the fair tax from 23% to 28% for 2 years to do this, yes or no? You know, I think people would be more aware of what's going on with our government financing when they actually, I mean, would you pay from 23% to 28% for national health insurance for everybody? Would you, and I'm not just guessing at the percentages, you know, but it just would make
probably
everything more noticeable, more upfront, less waste, less hassle. And Ned, you're working.
What's 5% at $50,000? $2,500? Who wouldn't do
right.
that? Yeah. Combine a family insurance plan for $2,500 divided by 12.
Well, there's all of this. Now we're coming to the end of the hour, folks. So, but I had to make that point because it is a petition that's being circulated locally just for the fair tax in Michigan. I think everybody should try to find out more about the fair tax proposal. I'd love to see it at the federal level. Yeah,
I'd like to see it in the state level now.
Yeah, well, it could happen just that quick.
A lot easier.
Now, it does take a little planning and administrative. Like, for example, if it's passed at the federal level, it's 2 years before it gets started because they got to get systems in place and, you know, redesign who does what when and re-inform people. So even if it was approved in November, it might not happen in January. It might take another year or so to get the whole system in place. And of course, as you said, they got to hassle out those prebate check amounts, too, to see what's fair. Okay, well, thank you, Ned Apigian, talk show host of the Forum program, for being with me as my co-host today. Thank you, Jerry Jablinski and James Hodges from
Always
the Oliver
pleasure.
Production. And we'll be expecting Joanne Korczynska and Highway 61 Big Band Music coming on next.
After our closing music.
That's right, our out theme, which is... always inspiring, I think. So take care out there, as I say, and have a good weekend. This is WHFR Dearborn. And in the meantime, let's keep stirring things up.